Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runners, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by UCAN. Perform, work out, energize. That's GenerationUCAN.com. By VeloFix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By Polar, winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, we sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. To help out, go to challengeathletes.org. And you can check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here. Our next guest, he is looking to make the Paralympic swim team for 2020, going to Tokyo. His name is Jamal Hill. Jamal, how are you?
Well, I'm blessed this morning, Bob. Thank you for having me on the show, brother.
Hey, you kidding? It was an honor to get to meet you the other day over at our Challenged Athletes Foundation building. So what were your impressions? Had you known much about CAF before you came by?
I knew very, very little. I really just kind of been introduced to CAF a month earlier. I got to tell you, though, anyone listening, it is worth the trip down to San Diego. Beautiful facility, so much history, such a rich culture of just giving and love, man. So, yeah, I'm happy to really be a part of the Challenge Athletes Foundation family now.
We love it. Hey, so take me back. Growing up, was swimming always your sport?
Swim was the first sport, yeah. That was the very first sport I was ever in. So my mom never learned how to swim. So she made sure from day one it was mommy and me with her, and then, you know, I matriculated in the swim team.
So it was more about mommy was learning to swim too, and she brought you along and so that make sure that you were drown proof.
No, not at all, actually. I'm the one who taught my mom how to swim a few years ago.
You taught her?
Yeah, I taught her how to swim.
Wow. So she got you into swimming early, but she still didn't know how to swim.
She still didn't know how to swim.
How scary was that for her, getting in the water?
Well, with me, believe it or not, Bob, she was, you know, at total peace. She knows how good of an instructor I am, how good of a swimmer I am. She knew nothing. I wasn't going to let anything happen to her.
So of course.
It was really easy, man. I had her swimming in under 4 hours.
That is so cool. And does she still swim?
Oh, for sure. She's actually been thinking about joining master swimming. She wants to start competing.
I love it. Next thing you know, she's going to be doing triathlon. I like it.
You know, but we're going to need some new knees for her to do triathlon.
So you loved swimming. So age 10,
sir.
You're swimming, and your shoulders were going limp, and you didn't have, you know, were losing feeling in your lower legs and forearms.
Yep.
What did at first did the doctors have a clue what you had?
No. So it started out with my shoulder. So you know, my father, he would take me to swim practice every day, and I'm a kid. So I could do that, you know. Well, Bob, you know, you've seen a Lethal Weapon, right?
Yeah.
How we could pop that shoulder in and out of socket.
Right.
So I'm doing this trick for my dad. I think it's just the coolest thing in the world. And he's like, man, that is not normal. You should probably not be able to do that.
Right.
And so we went to the doctor, and they told me at that point, right, so this is probably like a spring of like of my 10-year-old year, right? I should have it. I think that was like 2004, 2005 for me. That spring, and the doctor said, hey, you know, he's got to stop swimming. Like, the overstretching of the shoulders, we're probably going to end up having to amputate this right arm if he isn't able to just keep it yet. Crazy. Just a terrifying experience as a parent, right?
To hear so. Or as a kid.
I mean, to be honest with you, Bob, I felt like it was an exaggeration from the jump. I wasn't too scared about getting my arm amputated. I was more inconvenienced, right? Because I was a right-handed kid, so I had to pick up a pencil with my left hand from then on in school. So it was more annoying than anything. Either way, though, you know, fast forward to the end of that year.
Yeah.
During Thanksgiving season, you know, I'm at Thanksgiving family house, and, you know, I fall asleep in the car, and I wake up, you know, my arm is still asleep, though, and then slowly but surely, like, my other arm falls asleep, and now my legs are falling asleep, and I'm fully conscious during all this. And so, you know, I just can't walk. I can't move. And we go to the hospital. I ended up becoming admitted to Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
Yep.
You know, you're well-versed in procedures and things like that. So, you know, they do spinal taps on me. You know, they throw me in the, what is that?
For MRI type of thing?
MRI machine. Yep. And, you know, now I start to kind of learn about the family history of Charcot-Marie Tooth.
So those you had some family history of this?
Yeah, so we actually have family history of Charcot-Marie Tooth. And it just started to manifest, I guess, you know, however genes turn on. I'm still not fully understanding how the science of it works, or I guess the biomechanics of it works. But it got triggered. Something triggered it. And I was left in a state of paralysis, right? So
yeah.
I could talk and I could blink, but like moving my hands, my feet, anything like that, I was left in that state for a couple of days. And then slowly my movement started to come back. But, you know, I spent like about 2 weeks in Children's Hospital, Los Angeles. Yeah.
So it's a genetic disease and it affects the extremities. This CMT, they call it, right?
Yeah, Charcot-Marie Tooth. So that's the name of three French scientists who discovered it. And specifically, it affects the peripheral nerves. Right. So I tell people all the time, like, my external sensation is decent, right? Like, so if you kick me, like, I feel pain, things like that. But internal, outward communication, right? So my brain to the motor neurons, like wiggling my toes,
right.
Holding on to something for a prolonged period, it just doesn't work for me.
I remember I watched some video of you swimming. And and when you're swimming, your legs are moving. But I'm guessing that you don't really know where the hell they're going.
No, man. They're
sort of doing their own thing.
My circulation stops right above the knee.
Yeah, so you have like no feeling below the knee.
No, so like more times than so. We have a short documentary out that came out earlier this year, and they got some really cool shots in it. So like, I'm kicking above the knee.
Right.
And if you saw the race, you see a lot of splash. But like, if you could zoom in, you would see like my feet are just running into each other.
Absolutely.
Like they're smashing into each other.
Can you swim? Can you, like in training, do you find you use like a pull buoy? Does that make life easier?
You know, I'll use a pull buoy for pull sets and definitely to try and train separation in the legs. But, I mean, you already know, once we start going at those high speeds, man, they just.
Yeah.
You can only control as much as you can control.
So growing up with this from 10 on, how hard was that as a little kid? Because all the other kids are out playing baseball and football and basketball. And I mean, could you play sports?
Yeah. So, I mean, honestly, it's godsend. Got to give a big shout out to my parents. Number one, right? So I experienced all that at Children's Hospital. I knew that something wrong was happening.
Right.
But we never had a sit down. Or my parents told me, hey, you have this disease, and it limits you in these ways. They never told me any of that.
Wow.
So, yeah.
So you're basically flying a little blind, just going, okay, I guess, I mean, this is just what I'm going to have to deal with.
Right, pretty much. And so, you know, I still play sports. I play basketball. I play baseball. I even tried my hand at football. And, you know, the experiences were, man, so many ankle sprains, literally. Oh, my. You would not believe the amount of ankle sprains I've had in my life.
Oh, I can't imagine. If we get them playing basketball, just stepping on somebody else's foot when we have control of our foot, and you don't have control.
This is me running down the court with no one around, tripping over my feet, spraining my ankle.
Wow.
You know, just the most embarrassing things.
So it sounds like until you were 23 or so, it was really hard for you to... You know, to talk to people about what you were going through.
Yeah, that's absolutely the big point of shame, man. You know, it's like, because I blend in so easily, right? You know, it's when you look at me, it's, you know, especially if you see me in a bathing suit or something like that, like, it's like, oh man, this guy's a physical specimen. Like,
right.
What could possibly be wrong with you? And I didn't want to be the guy, I didn't want to feel like I was making excuses, really. And so, it really became a prisoner. Yeah, I became a prisoner to it. Right. So in high school and college, you know, I'm competing against people, my coaches. There was just never an open line of communication. So, you know, people from 10 years ago were hitting me up like, oh, man, how did I dated you? I was your best friend. How did I never know this? It's like,
wow. So you really kept that. It's interesting because back in the day, if somebody was an amputee, they would cover it up. They'd wear long pants. It was a feeling of shame, right? Back in the day.
Right.
Then it became sort of, okay, this is who I am. And then the kids nowadays, they got, you know, Scooby-Doo and they've got they got Spider-Man on their legs. So the legs are sort of, hey, look at my cool leg.
Right.
For you, you're one of the, someone who has cerebral palsy is what we call an invisible injury.
Right.
Where people look at you and they count the limbs. They go, okay, he's got four limbs. He's a total stud. I don't see the issue. But they don't see the fact that your forearms, you really have no feeling there. You have no feeling below the knees. Was it hard for you as a guy who looks like an able-bodied guy to go, okay, I have a category in the Paralympics. There's no reason why I shouldn't go because I'm dealing with something that's pretty major here, even if you can't see it.
That was actually probably one of the heaviest personal journeys that I've been on thus far.
Yeah.
So my current coach, Wilma Wong, she's the one that's been training me for the past two and a half years. And she was the first person that I ever disclosed, you know, this condition that I have, right? Specifically because she asked me, like, hey, you know, I've been looking at you. You remind me of my cerebral palsy patients. And so I just let her in on it. And she's like, hey, well, unless we can cure this, which as of right now, there's no known cure.
Right.
We may have to go to the Paralympics and you compete there. And so, you know, just quite frankly, man, as soon as I heard that, I felt personally disrespected. Right. Like,
right. Yeah.
This is
somebody saying to you, you're lesser than, you can't go to the Olympics. You got to go to the Paralympics. Then you realize that the Paralympic guys are badasses.
Oh, man.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
People are like, oh, I'll go there and play with the kids who can't really swim and they're wearing floaties. And no, the guys in your category are kicking ass and taking names.
Top-notch athletes, top-notch performers. And, so we decided to go and do it. And so I start competing. And, you know, it just came to this point where one night I woke up in the middle of the night. I was still staying at my parents' house. And, you know, I was just in tears, man. I woke up my father and I just broke down, like absolute broke down. I was having like a true identity crisis, right?
Yeah.
Here's this person that I've been convincing myself that I am, right, for the past decade. And I was like, I'm really kind of being forced to accept my limitations, right? Or like acknowledge, right, kind of the width of my abilities. And it was tough, but I mean, it was a blessing, man. Since I've kind of came out about that, joined the Paralympics, my career has just been on an escalation, man. Like going up, touching people, inspiring people, speaking. Now I'm on this podcast with you.
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? It's been a journey. So there's definitely so much power in just the truth of self, right?
No question. And as a you're a sprint guy, right? You're not looking to go long. Wait, we talking 50 and 100?
100.
50
and 100.
50 and 100.
The real one. 50 freestyle, 100 freestyle, 100 backstroke. 50 freestyle is the bread, butter, meat, and potatoes.
And what's your PR right now?
Right now my PR is a 26.1.
Ooh.
The world record in my category, though, is 3 seconds faster. That was set a couple years ago. So to make this Paralympic team, right, we've got until June to, you know, make the change and everything. And I think we really got a good shot at it. But to even make the team, I'm going to have to be top five in the world. Right now, I'm
right.
Number 14 in the world.
You're number 14 in the world, and you've been doing this for how long now in terms of swimming, Paralympic hopeful?
1 year.
Yeah, you've been doing it 1 year, and you're already top 15 in the world. That's pretty cool.
That's pretty good.
So it sounds like so many people in your world had no idea that what you were dealing with. They'd see you swimming, and they just think, okay, he's a good swimmer. You're a solid swimmer because your times, obviously, you're faster now, but they weren't that different. These are quality times.
Right.
How have people reacted? I'm sure you were thinking, oh my, people are going to look at me differently. Did it surprise you, the fact, I think in this, the fact that the world is so much different now and people are understanding that everybody is facing challenges, Did it surprise you that people were like, oh, that's awesome, let's go?
Yeah, man, honestly, it did. Like you said, the social climate of the world is just in a completely different space than even just 10 years ago, right? When you were growing up. When I was
growing up 10 years ago, yeah. 40 years ago, 50 years ago, yeah.
Hey, don't let them age you. Don't let them age you.
Never. Never.
But, yeah, it's so different. And it really, oh, man, I wish I had a little bit more time to think and put this into the words I want to say. But so much backing, right? Like, so many people have just, like, what I'm thinking is going to be like, Jamal, you're not enough, has really become like, oh, wow, Jamal, like, you're more than enough, bro. Like, dude, I had no clue that doctors were telling you that you shouldn't be able to walk. Like,
yeah,
I had no clue. Like, dude, you just do. I thought what you're doing was cool as it was, but like now that I know this, it's like, no, dude, that's like miracle status.
It really
is. And so, it just, you know, I'm definitely a firm spiritual believer. So just all glory to God and like all the people around me, and just. It's been an unbelievable experience, man. So much love, so much support. And I'm glad because I'm able to do a small part in bringing awareness to challenge athletes, right? Like,
right.
And we're able to bring more spotlight this way. And it's an amazing, especially in the world of swimming right now, like with the ISL starting to take off and just it becoming more of a household sport.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
It's actually,
go ahead.
I was going to say, it is a great era because if you think about it, you look at swimmers, you'd see swimmers once every 4 years.
Right.
And
exactly.
Right. And people are retiring when they're 19, 20 years old. They're old and they're out and there's no way for them to make a living until the next Olympics. Right. Now with swimming leagues and especially over in Europe, yeah, people can make a living as a swimmer, which besides a Michael Phelps, not that many people do.
Right. You're absolutely right. I mean, you add that with the advent of social media and the power of personal brands in the modern age.
Yep.
And I mean, there's really limitless potential here. There's really limitless potential. You can reach so many people in this digital space now.
Love
and
it.
People care. Like, people want to know. People actually kind of like swimming more than just every 4 years, but there was no reason to show it, right?
Never.
Like, we all know that the swimming in the Olympics is the single most watched event in the world, every single Olympic Games.
Yes, and there's more people.
Yeah.
I think from a Paralympic side as well, there's more swimming events and swimming athletes than I think any other sport.
Oh, well, you know, I don't know if we try. I've seen the track and field teams.
Track and field is big, too. Yeah, track and field and swimming dominate the games. No question about
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes, sir.
So, 2020, but you're also thinking 2024. You're an LA guy, so 2028 would be pretty good.
Okay.
I like it when people aren't looking at this as, hey, this is going to be a hobby. I'm going to do this, and then I'll move on to a real life. And
No,
you're looking at this. This is going to be your life. This is it. This is going to be your career. You're going to be a professional swimmer.
Yeah.
And you're going to impact other folks because you're going to show them, hey, I was told I would never walk.
Right.
And I'm swimming 26 seconds, soon to be 23 seconds for 50 meters.
Yeah.
Changing everything.
You literally hit the nail on the head with that one. You know, the past few years before I joined the Paralympics, a lot of my circle saw it as a hobby for me.
Right.
Like, my parents, they always saw it as a hobby. But, Bob, I think to even have this opportunity and to have been in it this long, I never saw this as a hobby. Like, when you have faith, you don't always know how it's going to work out, but you know that, like, the opportunity will come.
No question.
No, this is my career. I'm 100%. Plan on making this Tokyo 2020 team meddling, and we're going to France in 2024. We're coming to LA. We're staying in LA.
Exactly. Yeah.
I'll be in my early 30s, early to mid 30s, and that's the beautiful thing about swimming, man. Such low impact.
You
people
do it
who
forever.
Don't know, listening, you can do it forever, man. These old cats are the ones cleaning up at 2016, right?
Like, right.
In the sprint races, right? Anthony Irvin. How old is that guy? He's like 34, 35.
Oh, look at back in the day, Dara Torres. I mean, she was still as a sprinter.
Man,
killing people.
Killing people. So, I mean, I compare swimming a lot to martial arts. Like, it's really such a skill, mastery, and technique sport. Like, you can be strong and have all the power in the world, but unless you know how to put it all together just right, you just can't compete at that level.
So what other, besides, obviously you're in the pool, and how many hours a day are you in the pool for somebody who's doing 50 and 100?
Yeah, so I'm in the pool right now. We're doing Monday, pretty much doing 5 days a week. So morning, 7 to 9 a.m., and then one night practice from 8 to 9 p.m. So that's like 2 hours a day, 3 hours on Sundays. I usually take, so I'm off Thursdays and I'm off Saturdays. Sundays from the pool. Thursdays and Sundays are rest days.
So you're swimming basically 15 hours a week.
About 15 hours a week.
Yeah. 60 hours a month for an event that takes 26 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm guessing that's not the only thing you're doing to prepare. You're doing some weights and doing some flexibility.
Absolutely. Stretching.
Yeah.
You know, if we just add in stretching and like the other routines, that's easily, you know, it's now like a four, five hour training day altogether.
Yeah. It's a full time gig.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why it's a career, not a hobby.
So for CMT, are you seeing, are they doing more research? Are they coming up with potentially something that can help?
Yeah, so every year they're coming out with really new case studies. The only thing with CMT is that there are so many different variations of Charcot-Marie-Tooth. So there's like CMT1, CMT, you know, goes down to CMT like 2B to, you know, there's literally like 14 plus different variations, right? So they don't have there's no just one shoe fits all type thing here. To be quite honest and frank with you, brother, I don't keep up too much with the advancements in the healing of Charcot-Marie-Tooth. That is one thing that I'm still kind of holding on to myself.
Just, sure.
I don't like to be up to date with what the perceived limits are.
Exactly. You want to exceed those limits, and you don't really want somebody telling you what you can't do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So that's just
really
important, just, you know, to my mental state. So I can't even comment too strongly on where they are in terms of science.
The key is at this point, your focus is on your performance and getting to the next level. And also, letting other folks know, and I'm sure people reach out to you who have been recently diagnosed, that a lot of times the doctors are telling them what they can't do,
exactly.
And you're sort of a living, breathing example of what they can do.
That's, again, spot on, man. I tell them, I talk to the parents, I talk to the kids, all the time, like, look, you got to stay mobile.
Yeah.
Like, stay mobile. And this goes for even on the Paralympic circuit, like, outside of people with Charcot-Marie-Tooth, you know, parents of amputees come to me and things like this, and I tell them, like, listen, you want your kid to be the best they can be, you need to put them on a regular swim team. Like,
yes.
there are people in the Paralympics that swim way faster than able-bodied people. You put them on a regular team. Like, I don't think there's really anything worse than just disassociating socially, right? Because you feel so different, and you feel like you can't. And that starts to become a belief. And ultimately, that limits your potential. So, yeah, I tell them, like, no, you need to move, right? Just like my parents always told me, I would cut a home, right? And there would be these kids that I just thought were way less athletic than me, man. But for some reason, they're able to jump higher than me. They can run faster than me. And it just would always blow my mind.
Right.
And so I would come home, and I would tell them, like, I don't get it. Why is this stuff not working? My parents would always say to me, listen, you keep practicing, we guarantee you one thing, you'll for sure get better than you are right now. And that is that's what it's about.
Right.
Like, if you put in the work and you practice, I guarantee you it will be better than it currently is. And I mean, what else can you ask for?
Exactly. Was there a moment you look back at as your lowest moment?
I would say there was definitely a pivotal moment for me, lowest moment.
What was the pivotal moment?
The pivotal moment, I was in high school. I was at the league championships in high school, and I had won the 50 yards in high school.
Yep.
Right? So I had won the 50-yard race. And I think in yards, I swam like about, it was like a 24 seconds in yards. So, you know, it was pretty good for my league.
Oh, yeah.
Either way, I was still about like a few tenths off of making it to CIF. So that's the state championship
yep.
in California. And so the officials, they came to me and they said, hey, you know, like you won. Congratulations. If you want to, we can time trial you. And that'll give you an opportunity to continue your season into state. Mind you, the race I just won was the fastest I had ever swam in my entire life. So I was extremely nervous. And time trial is just you in the pool.
Right.
Everyone's watching, and it's just you. I was so nervous, so scared. I was like, man, I don't know if I can go that fast again, especially if I'm not even racing anybody except for myself. And I ended up deciding not even to do it. Like, I didn't even try. I decided to not even try the time trial. And when I did that and I went home and I told my dad about it, that was probably one of the most pivotal points, because it was like from then on, I'm like, you know, no matter what, whenever I'm presented with an opportunity, I've done something that's earned me the right to at least try.
Right.
Like regardless of what the outcome may be, we're going to give it all the time. Like, we're going to go for it. And I mean, that's been pivotal. Like, that's what's gotten me to this point. Right, that's what made me hold on to swimming for so long. That's what helped me build this personal brand. Like, I don't really know, but I didn't get here for no reason, so we're just going to keep going.
So, Jamal, are you doing some motivational speaking as well?
Yes, sir. Yeah, I am doing some motivational speaking. A lot of it has been at Shark Comedy Tooth events.
Mm-hmm.
I've been featured on CBS. I've been featured on national television, the CW in Houston. Really everything that we're taking in right now, me and the team, is through the website, www.swimuphill.com. That's the moniker.
Swim uphill. I love it.
Yeah. Jamal Hill, swim uphill, right? It's all an uphill battle, man.
Well, but you've sort of leveled that hill out. Like, you brought the little tractor in and sort of took the top and middle out of the mountain, so that it's, you know, it's, you're swimming sort of uphill, but now you're,
yes,
you know, pretty soon you'll be swimming downhill.
Hey, you know what? That's when I'm excited for that.
I love that.
For that.
I love it. Hey, Jamal, thanks for taking time, and it's great to have you part of CAF family. I love your, I just love your enthusiasm for everything that you're doing, and you know, it's cool because I'm sure when you go to regular swim meets and people are there and they look at you swim, and then they find out that, you know, you have really no feeling below the knees and no feeling in the forearms.
Yes, sir.
And you are as challenged as anybody out there, and you're kicking their ass.
Yes, sir.
That's there's a lot of lessons that the able-bodied community learns from that. And number one is, you know what? What's my concern? My back is a little sore. Gosh, I don't know if I want to swim today. Then they see you, and they know that put that away. There's no reason why I shouldn't be in the pool.
Right.
Love that.
Let's get after it. And real quick, if I may,
yes.
say this all the time. Being on the Paralympic site, I get that same experience and feeling, right? Because I work with some of the most inspirational people on the planet. And I stand by that truly and wholeheartedly, man. There are people out there, you know, quadriplegics.
Yep.
Like, all just everything that you can possibly imagine. Living without excuses, living limitless, and doing these unbelievable athletic feats. So, you know, just even being on the Paralympic circuit has been an absolute blessing and eye-opener, and made me want to push myself that much harder because I see what these other individuals are accomplishing in their lives.
Well, and you watched Roderick Sewell
finish. That's my boy.
That's the Ironman World Championship. Watching double above knee amputee Roderick Sewell becoming the first double above knee amputee to finish the 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bike ride, 26.2-mile run, World Championship in Kona, Hawaii. Were you watching that one online?
That is, yeah. You sent me the link, man. I tuned into it. And this guy is just absolutely unbelievable. Like, just if I may, man, the balls of this guy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. 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 No. Yeah. He's. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. I love Roger. He is an outstanding one, just an outstanding athlete, but even more than that, just an outstanding human being. An absolute light and pleasure to have him around. Great positive energy, and it's just an honor to know him. Like.
That's
again,
so
that
cool.
That speaks for itself. Double above knee amputee and competed. And he ran.
Yeah.
He didn't even, he had options. No, he said, I'm strapping it on and I'm,
he could have
doing it.
He could have used a racing chair and gone like 2 hours faster. But no, he wanted to run.
But
and it's funny because I didn't even know he ran until March. I knew that Roderick swam, but then he ran like a 139 half marathon at this Oceanside 70.3 race. He was doing the swim and the run, and I'm like, wait a second. You did what? And that's when we started the push for Roderick to go to Kona, and the next thing you know that there's something about being young and strong and not seeing any limits, like living the way you've lived, where you live without limits. And so somebody says, oh, my God, you've got 1 month to learn how to ride in a kneeler. Okay, I'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Not a problem, right?
Not a problem, man.
I love it.
We work with what we've got. Special shout out to Roderick, though. I love him. I just saw him in Dallas, and he did well. He's back on the competitive circuit now.
Yeah,
he was the first one to actually, we did so with my brand. Where we just released these official racing swim caps.
Yes.
Signed by me. Right there on the spot, he bought two of them.
Nice.
So special shout out to my brother. Love him so much, man.
Love it. Hey, Jamal, thank you so much for taking time. Honored to have you part of the CAF family. We'll be doing more as we follow your road to Tokyo.
Yes, sir. Looking forward to it, if I may.
Yes.
All the listeners, please connect with me. Feel free. Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, all the same moniker, at Swim Uphill, Jamal Hill, Swim Uphill. The website, same deal, www.swimuphill.com. Bob, thank you so much, brother, for having me. Been a pleasure and an honor, sir.
I love it. Jamal Hill has been our guest again. We're brought to you by You Can. Perform, workout, energize. That's generationyoucan.com. By Velofix.com, the world's coolest mobile bike shops. By Polar, winners are made of blood, sweat, and data. By our Challenged Athletes Foundation, this last year we sent out 3,260 grants totaling $4.8 million to keep challenged athletes in the game of life through sport. To help out, go to challengedathletes.org and check out any of our interviews on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Babbittville.com. As always, endurance lives here.